2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome back to the Baseball America Fantasy Podcast. This is your host, Jeff Ponce. Alongside me, as always, is Dylan White, the creator, curator, the master of the Robo Scout, and the reigning NFBC main event champion. How's that going, by the way, Dylan? Is your conquest to repeat improved at all since the last time we spoke?
I would say no. We've also lost Wilson Contreras now, so it's pretty much a lost cause. I think we're just trying to money in the league rather than work on the overall. But the super with Jordan's doing okay. We're ninth, but like we're projecting quite well. So I don't know what's happening. And then one of our DCs is in first. And I really like that team. We just lost Jung-Hoo Lee though. So and we also had Wilson Contreras as well. So we're rolling with Carson Kelly and Harrison Bader as our backups, but could be worse. But yeah, that's the update on my NFBC teams.
My NFBC team that I co-manage with my friend Dan Greenberg, Dan Fu, for those that don't know, is doing pretty good. It's DC. We started the first 3 weeks kind of rough, and we have some underperforming offensive players, such as Julio Rodriguez being chief among them. But we jumped all the way up to third. Our pitching has been really, really good. And, you know, we have some players kind of waiting in the wings. I was looking today. I think we have like 8 guys that are in AAA that all could potentially contribute a few hundred at bats or get hot. And, you know, chief among them, Jackson Holliday, which didn't so much work out. But we never know about the second chances, right? This country is all about second chances. Canada as well. Love second chances. James Wood or Elvis Martinez, kind of like the guys that I want to have rostered. And then all my pitching is in the majors and, you know, contributing and pitching pretty well. So that team, it's like 60 points on 61, 62 on the pitching side, maybe like 43, 44 on the hitting side. And like I said, Julio hasn't gotten going. We actually have been sort of juggling, replacing Tristan Casas with a mixture of Alec Baum, who really moved out of the third base spot, and then Ryan O'Hearn and Joey Meneses, depending upon matchups. We're kind of, you know, playing the midweek swap game with those two guys, waiting for Casas to hopefully come back and, you know, contribute. So we'll see if that happens or not. But so far, so good. We just got to see if some of the underperforming players can pop back up. One that I lost, though, was Dansby Swanson. I know we didn't have that in the news, but that doesn't sound like it's going to be real long term. Maybe more of like a nagging thing that could linger throughout the rest of the season. That's more what I'm concerned with. But it seems like he should be back, I would think, within a couple of weeks. It seems. Just from the language, and just it doesn't seem like there's a high level of concern there. But that being said, a player that I have rostered all over the place, and I thought it was getting him back, and then immediately TJ Friedl, another injury, Dylan. What do we do here? Because it sounds like there might be he could miss some more time. I mean, it's a broken left thumb. So another fracture.
Sounds like 4 to 5 weeks, I think. Yeah. It's funny because so Rob DiPietro and I were talking on Sunday about who we're picking up, and TJ Friedl was available. And it's like, since we lost Trav, Wilson Contreras, Strider, like we're kind of hurting. We need any kind of offense, but we need like kind of not just week to week. We want someone who can like seasonally do well. So we picked up Pham last week or 2 weeks ago or something. And so point is we're discussing Friedl, and we have spent a lot of money on Pham and guys like that. So we're like, what do? We spend like he just got beaned in the thumb. We knew he was injured. And so we were discussing like, is this good because people are going to be scared off and we can get him cheap? But then the flip side is like, if we bid like $100 and then like he's out for 2 months, it's going to be horrible. So we were like, you know, let's just do a little tiny bet, a tiny bid. We didn't get him. And then we find out this 4 to 5 weeks. Long story, just to say that it's these decisions that happen on Sundays where you have the Sunday game where someone will get a save or something, or his gets beaned, like Austin Riley, like has tightness in his side. And then it's like, oh, what does that mean? I need a third baseman now. And do I bid on that? And just all the like machinations you have to make on a Sunday. It's just very, very psychologically taxing.
Yeah. And then sometimes like you think everything is set up and then something like, you know, the Friedel injury happens and then bam, you know, maybe news breaks at a certain point or after you would have maybe put in your bids for Fab. Yeah. And there's really nothing you can do. And you kind of have to, like, in this weekly labor, I'm going to have to sit on it for a week. Though that might be better than playing some of the players that would be options on my bench. I just need James Wood there, again, to get called up and save all of my teams with his mighty power stroke and hitting ability that seems to be vastly improved even year over year when it was pretty dang good. Some other news here. Brian Wu, did you see that start, first start back? You know, was pitching fairly well. It looked like it could have been the worst. He does get pulled from the start. He's scheduled to go again on Wednesday. It doesn't look like there's any sort of caution tape there. What's your level of concern, though, rest of the season with Wu?
I'm concerned. I mean, they took him out, and then everyone was freaking out, and it was like, oh, it's just precautionary. But then it came out that he was saying that he was feeling this kind of tightness after every start in the minors in his rehab. I mean, I'm not a doctor, but that doesn't sound great. When you feel sort of the same kind of discomfort that precedes Tommy John, I don't know. I'm a bit nervous. I don't want him to be injured, obviously. I don't want him to have Tommy John. Obviously, he's great for the sport. I like these young Seattle Mariner pitchers, and I want them to do well. Matt Brash just went under the knife, so I know it would be terrible for that team if that happened, but I'm a bit concerned. I don't expect him to go much more than five innings in this start on Wednesday. And we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah. Little concerned though. As I said, I had a choice between him and Gavin Williams. I'm remaining with Wu, but I do have 24 hours to make the swap there. So we'll see how that goes. I'm very on the fence about this one. All right, let's move on to another one here. Heston Kjerstad sent back down to AAA. Unfortunately, I think this is just a product of the depth of the Orioles. What do you do as a Heston Kjerstad owner?
Dynasty, obviously, you're holding. Redraft, you know, I might drop him. He came up and he didn't even really play that much, and he's only utility only in NFBC leagues right now, so he's, I mean, that's not even that great because he clogs up that one spot. He doesn't have any flexibility. So, you know, I think it's pretty clear you have to drop him in redraft, like in an NFBC redraft, depending on the depth of your league. You know, maybe you'll hold, kind of like a Jordan Walker thing. Like, do you hold Jordan Walker or not? I think he's kind of in that same ballpark. No pun intended. But yeah. I think in like high stakes redraft leagues where, you know, week to week, you can't afford to not have the flexibility. I think you have to drop them.
Yeah, no, I think in redraft leagues, you pretty much got to move away. if there's anything with dynasty component though, I think you got to hold. And I think this is the type of hold where the sell high point hasn't occurred yet. It's going to occur when this guy gets traded in a package for whatever pitcher or player the Orioles decide that they need at some point in late June into late July. Like, that's really where I think the opportunity is there. I think it's the same with Norby, but they have so many ready-made MLB players that if you roster these guys and have for, let's say, a season, two seasons, I think this is the right time to hold because that value could really jump astronomically if they're traded to a team where they slot in immediately and they're going to get every day at bats and they're going to get some actual runway to sort of struggle and find themselves and get their footing. I think that's the toughest thing with the Orioles predicament is mixing these young players in and allowing them to get their footing while also being, you know, among the best teams in Major League Baseball. So I think that's the really tricky juggling act. And I think we already saw it sort of happen with Holiday. And if we go back a year before, I think we sort of had it happen with Colton Cowser, who has since really gotten his footing as one of the best rookies in the American League now, and was a guy that a lot of people were off. And I think if you had tried to buy in on Colton Cowser in December or January, even early February within your dynasty leagues, you probably could have gotten him at a very cut rate price in comparison to what his actual value is. I think we saw it with Grayson Rodriguez, struggled, went back down, figured something out, came back up. Obviously he's injured right now, but has been one of the better pitchers in the American League over, you know, that stretch since he came back up. So I think you have to wait it out. And the situation might be there in Baltimore, the opportunity there, or it could be potentially elsewhere. But I think once these guys get playing time, get some of that runway and have some of that opportunity, it's going to be the point where maybe you make the determination and say, all right, now's the time to sell high, where people are really buying into it. You know, maybe I don't buy it so much, whatever, that you make a determination then. But right now, I think regardless of how you feel about either of these guys, whether it's Norby, you know, Kerstad, whatever, hold on to him and then trade a little bit.
So who of Jackson Holliday, Heston Kerstad, and Kobe Mayo do you think will be back or in the majors first of those three, the big three?
Ooh, you know,
hot seat.
I want it. My heart wants it to be Mayo. My head feels like it's probably going to be, it would either be Holiday or would be Kerstad. It kind of depends on what the situation is. If there's a middle infielder that gets injured, I think it's probably going to be Holiday again, especially if he continues to hit, you know, do his thing. I by no means have written him off whatsoever just because he struggled for, you know, whatever, 30 at bats in the major leagues. That happens. I feel like Mayo, there's some roster juggling there with the 40 man roster. He'd have to be added, et cetera. He will at the end of the season, but maybe they don't have to force the issue there. So he's had a lot of AAA time though. That's usually an indicator of readiness, especially when he puts up the type of numbers that he's been putting up for years now. But what say you? What's your opinion on that?
I think Holiday is probably the safest choice, but I kind of think like Mayo, like Ramon Urias is not doing very well. So I could see them kind of just like DFAing him and bringing up Kobe Mayo. I think Kobe Mayo has obviously, he's earned it. I mean, they've all kind of earned it. He hasn't had the chance yet. They're kind of rolling with Mateo as well for a bit. So maybe they're like, it's not as pressing for Holiday. I don't know. I mean, it's a nice problem to have. I would like Kobe Mayo to be the guy, but I kind of think it'll be Jackson Holiday. Kerstad, I think, is probably third on that list, unless there's like an obvious injury, an outfield type injury or something. I think it's Holiday or Mayo.
But yeah, that'd be interesting. I don't know. The Mayo one, they'd have to remove somebody from the 40 man roster. So that's sort of the only question. Unless there's like somebody goes on the 60 day, I think there's maybe, you know, potentially an opportunity there. So yeah, I don't know. That's kind of interesting. Hey, let's keep moving here because we got a few other news. I'm very new to the English language. Evan Carter going for an MRI in the back. I'm a little worried about Evan Carter. What say you, Dylan?
I'm a little worried. Apparently, this is a thing that he's kind of had for a long time. And so the Rangers are saying kind of precautionary and, you know, just to make sure things are okay. Cause you know, he's a huge long-term asset for them. But you know, to be that young and to have back problems, like I don't like that. I've been haunted by Chris Bryant and Christian Yelich. Back injuries are no fun. And especially if you're that young and already having them, it's a bit concerning. So he's been sitting against lefties, which I do not like. And the writing was kind of on the wall that something was up, like an IL stint or something was happening, because I don't think they're going to bench him. So, you know, hopefully it's not a long-term chronic issue, of course. But, you know, I still like Evan Carter. I don't know if I would buy low. I don't know if anyone would be selling him right now, because I think, you know, they're in for the long haul and they don't want to sell low. So I think you just got to hold and sit tight and see what happens.
I think that is 100% reasonable. Can't disagree with you there. As an Evan Carter owner myself in quite a few places, I am, you know, holding the wall, as they say. Can defend that wall for Evan Carter. Especially in my OBP and points formats, he still was actually providing some value, even though, you know, he was traditionally sort of slumping by your slash line or sort of 5x5 roto standards. But in the points world and the OBP world, he's got a very special skill, a very special set of skills that allows him, you know, to run up those numbers. All right, let's do some good news here. Jason Dominguez on a rehab assignment in low A Tampa. Dylan, are you excited for Jason Dominguez's return? And I'll piggyback on top of that first question, because that's a cookie. The real question here, the real meat in the meal, real entree. How many at-bats do you think Jason Dominguez gets in 2024 with the Yankees?
Wow. So he is starting his rehab assignment tomorrow, low A. The first 2 weeks, apparently he's DHing, so not playing the field. So they're slow playing him. Don't want to put any stress on his arm, etc. So, you know, this rehab assignment is not just going to be a thing of 2 weeks to shake off the rest and then he's up. So, you know, a month maybe. And then, so that means All-Star break. And I think he'll be up. I think that he made such an impression in the majors last year for the brief time he was up, with like 3 or 4 home runs in like a week and a half or something. At least that's what it felt like. I guess he'd be pushing Verdugo out, at least in playing time. I don't know about like kicking him off the team, but at least playing time wise.
Physically, they're going to physically have him removed from Yankee Stadium. Just like you're going to have to lift him. It's a feats of strength sort of
festival. Drag him by the chain. So, yeah, I mean, it's a nice problem to have as well. Judge, Soto, Verdugo, and then Jason Dominguez. I mean, maybe he DHs, but, you know, they have DJ LeMahieu and then Rizzo and these kind of like DH types. Stanton, of course. Yeah. Bat speed Stanton. So, I mean, I think he'll get pushing 300, 250 at least. I think quite a bit. Like, I don't think it's, less than 100. This may sound stupid in retrospect. In October, we're doing the off-season review. But I think, you know, 250 to 300, maybe?
Yeah, I don't think that's unreasonable by any stretch of the imagination. Frankly, I think that's pretty reasonable. So there we go. That was Jason Dominguez and his return to playing baseball again, which I think is exciting for Yankees fans and Dynasty fans and prospect fans. We've been following him for quite a long time. Then we're going to go back to bad news now. I'm sorry. Austin Riley, oblique MRI on the 1 to 5 scale, 1 being not concerned, 5 being extremely concerned. How concerned are you about Austin Riley?
I guess a 3. I mean, he's not playing today. He went for an MRI. And when they don't get results like this, it's usually, I don't know, in my experience, it seems like it's bad. So I'm assuming an IL stint. Hopefully it's not like a grade 1 or grade 2. I don't know if you saw this. I know the bat speed stuff is probably a topic we're going to talk about, but Tristan Casas was saying how training for bat speed, I mean, this is why we're seeing oblique and side issues so much, because it's like so much rotational torque is necessary. So, you know, you don't like to see these obliques. They seem to take a long time. Austin Riley is obviously a huge asset to any team. Maybe the Braves don't need him as much, but any fantasy team losing Austin Riley for a month would not be good. So I'm hoping it's just he got some tightness, precautionary MRI didn't show anything. They're just going to give him, you know, 3 days off and then he's back. But I don't think that that is what's going to happen. I think he's going to go on the IL for at least 10 days.
So what's the number?
A three.
I think that's a reasonable answer there, Dylan. I can't knock that whatsoever. All right. Last piece of bad news. You ready for it? Jung Ho Lee, dislocated shoulder. How sad are you, Dylan? You upset? Do you have a lot of Jung Ho Lee? I feel like you were a guy who rostered Jung Ho Lee in quite a few spots. Or maybe I'm mistaken.
I wanted to roster him in quite a few spots. I only have him in that one DC, the good DC. I'm disappointed.
I'm disappointed, Jung Ho.
Exactly. It was originally a separated shoulder, and then there was like a clarification that no, it's actually just dislocated. I don't know what's worse. I assume dislocated is better, and that's why they're trying to not backtrack, but make the correction on the facts. So, I mean, I don't know what that's going to entail. He's already on the IL. Luis Matos came up for him, but I think Jung Ho Lee was good. Like he wasn't really lighting up the scoreboard, but underneath, like the expected batting average and all those things were quite, he should have, in quotes, done better than he was doing. So very, very optimistic for me, as far as I'm concerned. And when you look at the bat speed stuff, he was squaring up, although his bat speed isn't, you know, lighting up the world, he was squaring up at a very high rate. So he's kind of in the Stephen Kwan, you know, Luis Arias kind of quadrant, which is kind of what you expect. So I'm not worried about his slow start. I'm worried about more about the injury and lost time. But, you know, he's going to be the center fielder for the Giants for a long time. And he's going to be leading off for them with like 280 to 300 batting averages. 10 home runs, 10 stolen bases, that type of thing. So yeah, I guess, in terms of this year, I'm disappointed. I mean, it's kind of like Stephen Kwan too, right? He's got his hamstring thing. He's going to be out for a few weeks too. So, you know, these low bat speed guys, high batting average, high OBP they're also being felled by the injury bug.
Yeah. It's sad. There's so many injuries.
Yeah.
Like I'm constantly having to make tough decisions in leagues where I have like three IL spots, you know, and it's a guy maybe you wanted to keep and you're like, you know what? I might as well dump him and replace him, you know, like a keeper league where I keep eight in a 12 team league. I've had so many injuries and it's like, I'm trading off like guys like Josh Jung for fifth round, sixth round picks. Just be like, well, at least I'm getting something for him as opposed to just dropping him out there. But you know, that's how it goes. All right, you know what? I'm going to end up on a happy note before we take a break and then jump into some RoboScout and some of that stuff. We do have some good news to end it on. One of our favorite prospects from the offseason, potential breakout guy, Joandry Vargas, all 6'4" of him. He is starting in the ACL tonight as we are recording. He's 1-for-2 playing shortstop and leading off in that lineup as well. So against the ACL Royals, they are up 4-1 as we speak. Maybe he'll do some more damage or do something good between now and the end of the show, and we'll update you then. But with that being said, Dylan, let's take a break. What do you say?
Let's do it.
All right. We'll be right back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. That's why I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America. It allows me to do everything on one website. I get quality candidates. I can schedule them. I can interview them. I can screen them. I can send messages to them, all within Indeed. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, and we are back. Dylan, as I teased before the break, we're going to talk a little RoboScout. I feel like over the last couple of weeks, the robot's really gotten chugging along. You know, like the information's getting poured in there. You know, with each update, everything's getting stickier and stickier. Do you feel the same?
I do. I do. Part of me is pleased. A lot of the top names are names that are very popular. Maybe it's the chicken or egg, but in the dynasty leagues that I'm playing in, or just seeing on Twitter, like these are the names that are being talked about. So that's good. We are finding the standouts and the breakouts already. The flip side is it's boring. The top 10 are staying as the top 10. I want to see the new names pop up. So, you know, I think it's the RoboScout's too good at finding the signal immediately that, you know, once they find the signal, he just stays there. So I might have to scroll down on the sheet a little further to get some more interesting names to talk about.
But I think there's been plenty of interesting names so far. And actually one name I wanted to call out, I think you mentioned him in the article this week. If not, I'm sorry, I'm mistaken. Jay Allen is a guy, you know, getting some updated data this morning from the past, you know, so however many weeks, and, you know, 5-6 weeks in the minor league season, 5 if you're in below AAA, 6 if you're in AAA. Jay Allen, the second man from the Reds, is definitely going to be like one of my major cheese balls this year. I'm all over this guy. I know that he's repeating a level, but at the same time, Dylan, he only had like 65, 66, 67, 68, somewhere in that range games over a couple of seasons. Fully healthy. He's athletic. Center fielder. There's legit power numbers. And the contact, and then on top of it, the expected WOBA on contact, which is something that I always like to look at, sort of match up with the underlying numbers and say, all right, is there something afoot here that's maybe wrong that – you know, it's getting boosted up or whatever, artificially. Really, really good, really good, just, you know, square contact quality. And then on top of it, there's some decent skills, some athleticism. I think this guy's a dude. I honestly going to make my call right now that I think it's going to be a top 100 guy very, very shortly.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I don't know how RoboScout had him or not, or if you mentioned him in this week's article. Forgive me if you didn't.
You know, I did a lot the week before. He's fourth in high A.
Yeah.
When he debuted at 2021, maybe in the complex, like low sample size, he was one of the top guys that RoboScout liked. So he was firmly on my radar. And then he had a down season, and last year wasn't so hot. But yeah, I mean, this year the contact is basically league average, and it was like 62% the year before. 3-year 90th exit velocity. 3 years ago, it was 100 miles an hour, then 100 miles an hour. Now it's like 105.5.
Yeah.
The barrel rate's gone from like 10%, 9%, and now jumped to 18%. Like, it's just a full-on breakout across the board on all the StatCast stuff. He has 6 home runs, 7 stolen bases in just 93 plate appearances as a 21-year-old. Everything is pointing up. Like I said, he's number 4 in high A. The only thing I see that RoboScout sees, or both of us see, is 53% ground ball rate. I mean, he still has the barrel rate, 18% barrel rate, which is good. So obviously he is hitting it at good launch angles and stuff when he does make hard contact. But, you know, I'd like to see that be less than 50%. But, yeah, I mean, he looks like a 2020 guy. Very athletic guy too, right, for the Reds?
Yeah, I think some of that stuff is probably a little bit of a concern. When he does elevate the ball, though, it's like elite sort of contact. In that sense, like, I guess his batted ball profile is like kind of reminiscent of like Domingo Santana a little bit, which is good and also bad. So we'll see. I mean, but still, like, you know, like you said, a fairly young player. And yeah, I mean, the skills look solid, but EVs are there, and it's a 451 ex Wobacon on 50 batted ball events. So, kind of interesting there, I think, you know. So he's definitely a name that kind of jumped out for me. But you mentioned some complex names, some other players throughout the article. Are there any players in particular, Dylan, that you wanted to sort of spotlight here on the podcast?
I mentioned a guy that I was interested in. It was Edgeline. I think that's how you pronounce it. Edgeline Perez, Yankees catcher. We didn't have like the full Statcast data. We had a very small smidgen of it at the time, but the numbers looked pretty good, like the surface numbers. But then after getting sort of the more thorough Statcast, it just like validated basically what I was seeing. Like, he's not chasing at all. He's got a contact rate like nearly 90%. His exit velocities are very good too, better than average. He's 18 years old.
Zero zone misses. Zero. He has 100% zone contact rate.
Can't beat that. Apparently, he's also a good catcher too. Good defensively, good arm, good blocking ability, etc. So, I mean, it's a teenage catcher. So, you know, all the caveats associated with that. But I mean, he looks like he's excellent. So yeah. He's actually at the top of the complex table right now. After I ran it this morning. So he's number one. Starlin Cabba, your cheese ball. And like RoboScout doesn't know anything about defense. And so it doesn't know that he is an incredible defender at short. He just knows what he's doing with the bat. And he's number two right now, tied with Braylor Guerrero, another hot name for the Tampa Bay Rays. Starlin Cabba, shortstop. He's got great contact, great pitch recognition as well. Maybe he could add some thump to the bat, but he's only 18 years old. The defense will carry him very far. RoboScout really likes what he sees. And then Braylor Guerrero, Tampa Bay Rays, power and speed. He's a 252 WRC plus already at the complex, 18 years old. So he's showing like a power speed blend. He's got good exit velocities as well, good barrel rates. He's also got fairly good pitch recognition, doesn't really chase. The thing about Cabba and Guerrero, Starlin Cabba and Braylor Guerrero, is that they do hit the ball on the ground so far. I mean, it's only been 25 plate appearances, so it takes more like 40 to 70 plate appearances before that kind of stabilizes. But, you know, they're like in the 60% range, so that's something I would like to see change. But, you know, those are the three big names of the complex right now: Edgeline Perez, Starlin Cabba, Braylor Guerrero.
Yeah. Yeah. I like those names quite a bit. And I wanted to shout you out. Had some, you know, some players in the off season that I had maybe taken in like later in this 30 team FYPD, my RAS 30 league that I've been talking about for, you know, almost 10 years now. I think it's 8. This is interesting, Dylan. Guys that I added in my 30 team league from the RoboScout article: Edgeline Perez, didn't put up a huge bid for him either. Brian Acuna, Twins. Right, you had mentioned him as well.
I did.
Nico Cavadas, who's been pretty hot. Yeah. I don't know where he is in the RoboScout, but the numbers have been good. He's in the hot sheet this week, and he's close to Boston. And I figure, like, they're rolling out Dom Smith, Garrett Cooper. Maybe the answer ends up being from within. You know, if he continues to hit the way that he's been hitting. You know, is it perhaps Nico Cavadas that could be the answer there in Boston? I don't know. I don't know about that. You know, he hits the ball in the air a lot.
It very well could be. He's 10th on RoboScout AAA. He's ahead of Andy Pajes and Tyler Black and Joey Loperfido. Like, these guys are guys who've already been called up and some of them are thriving in the majors. Yeah. So he's he's showing 25 home run power.
Yeah, 488. Ex Wobacon on 52 batted ball events. He's got a near 110 max. Miss rate is below 30%, so about a 70% overall contact rate. Just below 80% and zone miss, but I kind of anticipate that with a player like this. Only an 18.3% chase rate. So there's a lot of good things going here. You know, obviously there's decent bat speed. The decisions are pretty good. You know, his batted ball and quality of contact is also really good. So I took a shot on him in a 30-team league, figuring like, hey, you know, maybe he comes up and, you know, goes Bobby Dahl back at the end of the season. I can maybe trade something for him. Another name that you had pulled out that I made sure I added as well was Elizer Dishme. Dishme. That is Elizar. That's E like Eli. Elizar. Last name Dishmey. You had mentioned him. I went and checked the data. It was pretty interesting. Went and moved in that one. And then Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, who was a guy who had some pretty loud feedback coming out of Red Sox camp. And so far, you know, the numbers have been good. Some jump in velocity and stuff. I think he's really interesting. I picked him up as well as, you know, maybe some movers and some names that could potentially pop. I felt like this was kind of a good sort of window to try to make some of those moves. So judge my moves here, because I know I put out some guys that were mentioned in the RoboScout and that ranked pretty highly. How did I do for a 30-team league?
Yeah, 30-team, you did very well. Nico Cavadas, for sure. That's a no-brainer for me in a 30. That, yeah, Elizar Dishme, he was just outside our top 30 on the Marlins list as, like, other names to know after the initial top 30 came out. He had big stuff last year. And he came out of the pen and threw four innings and had a 57% strikeout rate, 7% walk rate. So ERA of 0, whip of 0.25. Looking at the data, like, looks like the stuff has even kind of stepped forward. So let me just call it up here. What do we got?
It was throws, like, pretty much only like two pitches, but like you said,
yeah,
he only threw, it's a complex as well. He only threw a total of 56 total pitches. Fastball sat 95. His slowest fastball was 94. He touched 96.6 at peak. Kind of dead zone-y shape. But the power is pretty good, and the slider looks kind of interesting. You know, it's sort of like a cut gyro slider, like in the low 80s. So, but like a projectable arm. And I do think with some of these guys that are like teenagers, you can see them sort of alter their grips and add a little bit more hop, you know.
For sure. I mean, the four-seamer, the 95-mile-an-hour fastball had a 57% whiff, and the slider had an 83% whiff. So, like, they're not really touching it right now at the complex. So I expect him to go up to low A fairly soon. Hopefully he's not a bullpen arm, but you know, with these two pitches, but you know, looks like it could be pretty dominant, at least so far. One outing, he looks pretty good. And yeah, Elmer Rodriguez Cruz. I think he you do the Boston team, right? So
yes.
I think he ended up on the 30, right? He just made the top 30. Is that right?
In
the
yes. update? He was, I think he was already on 30, but he might have moved up a spot or two. I didn't go crazy. He was already on the list. He was already somebody that I liked.
Oh, I see.
But he's definitely on there. I gotta see where I moved him up to. It's been a week or so since those came out, which means like 2 weeks since I worked on it, and I've erased all of it from my brain. But yeah, he's on here at 29. So 29. He moved up one, I think, from 30 with Christian Campbell. I didn't do a heavy re-rank on some of these systems where it was more adding guys in, replacing players who have been traded, or, you know, in some cases released, like Justin Durden, who was 30th on the Astros list. Sometimes stuff like that happens, so we gotta update them. We're gonna do more of a bigger re-rank at the end of this month, beginning of June, which will be more of shuffling once we have some actual, you know, sort of meat on the bone that we can chew down on and actually get some real, you know, signal as opposed to just sort of noise early in the season.
Yeah. But I like Elmer Rodriguez Cruz, though. I mean, he's 20 years old, low A, throws 95, 98, four pitch mix, 37% strikeout rate, 51% ground ball rate. So, like, not only does he have this, like, sort of big stuff, but, you know, he's getting the strikeouts and he's keeping it on the ground. So I do like him. He's in top 15 in low A. But I mean, the low A names are Matt Wilkinson, Jonah Tong, Quinn Matthews, George Clausen, sort of like all the, like the big breakout names, the sexy who's who right now. So don't take that as a knock that he's only like 15th in low A. There's a lot of huge names there in front of him.
Yeah, no, I don't take that as a knock whatsoever. Any other names from any level that sort of impressed you this week that you wanted to sort of call out to the mat here, Dylan, before we wrap this sucker up?
No, I liked Nico Cavadas. He was the one that surprised me the most. I say that, you know, the names don't really change that much, but that was a name that just kind of popped into the top 10 out of like from outside the top 25 in AAA too. So he's got the proximity factor with him as well. Another one that I'm really liking is Agustin Ramirez, another Yankee quote unquote catcher in Double A. He's number one now. He's passed Emmanuel Rodriguez, who's fallen to fifth. He's up there with Moises Ballesteros, but he's really separating himself. His data is really nice too. Contact better than average, 90th percentile exit velocity, 108, which is in the like Emmanuel Rodriguez territory. Average chase rate, excellent barrel rate. He's got 11 home runs and 131 plate appearances. Like, it's a true breakout for this guy. He's kind of a, I don't have him anywhere, but I kind of wish I do. And he's going to be in my top 100, my own personal fantasy top 100. Other than that, no, I mean, Alex Freeland, who I've called out a couple weeks for a couple weeks, and Yohendrick Pinango, who you called out. I picked them up in a couple leagues. They're top six in high A. Just the underlying stat cast is excellent, and it's fully supportive of their kind of breakout season superficially that they're doing. So I like them. Yeah, I mean, I try to touch on all the names, all the interesting names every week. So if you're not a subscriber, please subscribe, and you can see all this in its multiple glory. Words.
Right when it's, exactly. Right when it's released, right before your FAB, hours, in fact, before FAB on Sunday. Yep,
exactly.
But I think it's an interesting article, even for those that maybe aren't in dynasty leagues and just like to follow prospects and want to see how things are sort of viewed and production is viewed through the model's eyes. And we're the only public minor league model that pours in, you know, non-public Statcast data to bake in some of this. So I think it helps with the accuracy, and it allows you to sort of flesh out some of the, you know, the noise from the signal there and say, all right, there's some concerns here with the exit velocity or the chase rate and some of those things. I know a lot of people have contact and zone contact and chase rates and some of those things already. So a lot of it is the exit data, the launch angles, knowing some of the batted ball quality, which I think makes it really fun. Like I said, it's one of my favorite things to dig into, and I'm always glad that we have it here on Baseball America, available to subscribers. If you are a subscriber, thank you. If you're not, sign up. It's a great time. We got more information coming. We're going to have Josh Norris handling all the complex leagues all over the world. I promise you this. It's going to be a huge summer. Keep your eyes peeled, your ears tuned into the Baseball America podcasts. And don't forget to tune into our hot sheet show that we're doing with the folks over at Fell Territory, which I'm going to be on today as you're listening. So tune into that every Tuesday at 3 p.m. A lot of fun there. Dylan, I'm going to wrap this sucker up. Thank you, people out there. We're done.